Good day. Welcome to the Northwest Company Inc. fourth quarter results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Edward Kennedy, President and Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Kennedy, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning. It should have been good afternoon yesterday, so I'll start by apologizing for the Newswire, Globe Newswire crash or glitch that stopped us from getting the results out. That's why we rescheduled to this morning because I don't think it even was out before our 1 o'clock or 1:30 Winnipeg scheduled time. So here we are, and before we start, I just let you know on the call with me are John King, our CFO, and Amanda Sutton, our VP Legal, who Amanda will now read our disclosure statement.
Thank you, Edward. Before we begin, I remind you that certain information presented today may constitute forward-looking statements. Such statements reflect Northwest's current expectations, estimates, projections, and assumptions. These forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and are subject to certain risks, which could cause actual performance and financial results in the future to vary materially from those contemplated in the forward-looking statements. For additional information on these risks, please see Northwest's annual information form and its MD&A under the heading Risk Factors. Edward?
Thanks, Amanda. So I'm going to get right into the misses in the quarter because they deserve an explanation. Before that, I'll just say top line, we're very pleased. All of our banners, XGT, and I'm going to come back to Giant Tiger at the end, we're up mid-single digits on the comp side. We talked about this before, that this is all about getting sales right now at Northwest. Well, there's a few other things we have to button down, but we think that this is our niche. You know, the markets that we serve, they're not counter-cyclical, but they're quite different. And the spending and income profile that we have in front of us is quite favorable. So we've got our pedal to the metal on getting sales and building the business that way. Having said that, we had some big misses, and I'm going to talk about what those were. They come in roughly 1 million plus clumps, so they're the ones worth missing. In Northern Canada, we're putting in a new price management system as part of our merchandise management system. It's although we're a very decentralized company and we want to be that way to compete locally and win, there's certain aspects that benefit from central control, and one of them is price management. We don't have that system in place yet, but we've tried to put processes in place that allow us to more carefully and effectively manage price, promotion activity, track our markdowns, and really understand where we are on the margin side. We converted to that sort of in a manual way going into the second half of this year. We were very reliant on what we considered to be solid information in terms of our COGS, or cost of goods sold, the other cost inputs like freight, and then the information that we track centrally on scanning. We scan our shrink, any product loss, damage, et cetera, is scanned by stores. Promotional activity, store-based markdowns for a variety of different reasons are all tracked. And I'm talking now about the most sensitive price volatility categories, which would be fuel and food, much less so on general merchandise, which is zone priced. All of our other food and fuel are priced by store. Every store has a unique pricing profile geared to its cost inputs and local competitive situation. Those are just the parameters. As we then book our margins based on that information, we rely on the information we have, and we plan against that, and we expect certain rates to result. That didn't happen. When we trued up our inventory at year end, we were higher on what we had thought we had than what we achieved by about $3 million in Northern Canada. So that was a true up and a real eye opener for us on that we're not quite ready for prime time on central price management. There are some store disciplines. I could go on this a bit longer, but I think the key for us and for, I think, our investors to understand is we count on ourselves as being very good at execution on a relative basis and very hard to execute markets given the remoteness and other logistical factors of getting the right people enroll with the right standard operating procedures. This approach that I'm describing was another level of discipline in the company. We've had an initiative called Pure Retail that has stripped several hundred thousand hours of extraneous, non-low value-added work, and we felt that set the table for a more buttoned-down approach on some of the things that really mattered, including price management, and we clearly weren't there yet. So that caught us by surprise. I mean, what I'm describing right now is actually the only plausible reason why we could be in front of you in December and then talking in March about a margin miss. It's not, and as we get into it, we see the breakdown in a couple dozen stores where we didn't have that price discipline. Our inventory count procedures are not as tight as they should be as well. All these things can kind of slide by the side when you allow for a wide range of variability in what you book as a margin. But we are getting much more precise and in some ways just catching up to what other retailers do, albeit in a more sometimes difficult to operate environment. There's no excuse for this, and it's pushed itself up quite a ways. We thought we were in the rollout phase of our IT system. We still are going to turn it on, but we have some real lessons to learn here on pricing discipline, on inventory control discipline. The net effect of this financially, when we step back and look, we're still trying to unpack it, is that there's probably of that $3 million I just mentioned, simply saying, well, half of you should just have had higher prices or not. No, half of that realistically should go back into margin. Half, we should assume, should never have been there in the first place. You know, these are legitimate pricing activities that should have taken place in the store. So that's kind of where it ends up. It's in a way it's one time in nature, and another way, you know, we expected to have $3 million more than we did. So we think half of that should easily come back, and we're in our budget for this year. It is there already. Bigger picture for us is to focus harder on our execution in pricing and inventory controls. So that's $3 million. And that's in Northern Canada retail, by the way. It's interesting for me that in Alaska we have a much stronger cohort of stability in our stores, and this is another recurrent theme that you've heard from me perhaps ad nauseum, but that store stability is really important for Northwest. Relatively, it's good. Absolutely, it needs to be higher in Northern Canada. In Alaska, we don't have this issue. And they're in some ways more ready to take on the new merchandise system that we're about to put in place. So we don't see as much variability, but they also have a more stable tenured cohort of store managers, which we're trying to get to in Northern Canada. We've just parenthetically, we've opened a training center here in Winnipeg last week, and I think that's a big step forward. It's a $1.5 million annual investment to bring all of our store managers pre-hire or pre-going to their stores, both department and store managers, through the training center for a minimum of 30 days to ensure we've got the right core operating practices instilled before they get out to the field. The next miss in NCR, we had $1 million freight overage compared to LY. And this was the second year in a row. In the Mackenzie region of Northern Canada, the government pulled out of a lot of their ice-breaking services that would help us continue to use the barge as the Mackenzie River froze up. And until, in fact, the ice was thick enough to then switch over to winter road. So it would really minimize the usage of helicopter and more expensive airlift. That was cut back last year. What we do with our pricing in the Mackenzie region is we don't – I mentioned how every store has individual priced items tied to their cost inputs. We don't adjust that for the shoulder seasons that I'm describing where you have to – use airlift. We average it. So we take a markup that would accommodate that in our planning. So the customer kind of pays for it through the course of the whole year, and we don't get a big spike just because it's being helicoptered or flown in for a month or more. In this case, we underestimated what that bump had to be. We got caught off guard last year when the government changed their service level, and we thought we had it covered. We didn't. So that's almost another $1 million of freight loss, margin loss tied to higher freight that we were not going to put into our prices This year we will recalibrate and make sure that we cover that off. So if you're following this, that's $4 million out of NCR. Moving to the Caribbean, this is, you know, again, we've got all in the context of comp sales that are mid-single digits, you know, robust sales in the Caribbean. This is bad, I'd say, planning this and maybe even guidance, but it certainly was in our plan that we would do better margin-wise. Specifically, and I'll start with BVI. So BVI's had great sales. We've got reconstruction economy, tourism coming back. But last year, we underappreciated that post-hurricane recovery, immediately post-hurricane, there was a massive resupply by consumers for what they needed and for to resupply their homes in every shape and form. Right now, sales are great, but we're back to the normal cadence of promotional activity. We are doing more wholesale business now with the yachts and the other retailers that are opening, and our cash and carry business is a bigger blend of sales. It's all good news, except the blend of everything I just mentioned is way lower margin than what we had coming out of our main store post-hurricane. It was just the fact of nature, so to speak, that we had this unusual spike. We should have picked that up in our quarterly planning, that we were going to have a pullback in our margins because of this. So that was a big one, and it's kind of the bad. It's a hit in the quarter, but it's part of a much stronger picture of where we sit today in RTW, being our BVI business going forward. The other one, to a smaller degree, Barbados and St. Martin. We've got very strong results in St. Croix, and we expect to see that when we finally get our St. Thomas store opened next November. But in Barbados, competitive activity there and the general economy is still not as strong, so our margin eroded. And in St. Martin, although we're up and running and sales are building, when you look at the macro factors in St. Martin, it's really a kind of a tale of two islands. There's a direct contrast to BVI and to a lesser degree USVI. Their GDP is still down. They haven't figured out what their reconstruction financing arrangement will be with Netherlands. So it's a slower go. We're getting the sales back slowly, but it's not as it wasn't as profitable in the quarter. It was more like a relaunch of the store, still with some startup costs, and it didn't deliver a bottom line like we would have expected. So that was a margin hit as well. We had some write-off and refrigeration issues there coming out of the gates. Even though that store opened in September, some of these problems lingered into Q4. So it was an underperformer on the margin side. Those, what I've just mentioned, is about $1.8 million Canadian as far as a hit in the quarter. And now I'm going to get to NSA. So NSA, disappointingly to us, we didn't have our plane flying. And it's a, you know, $16 million investment sitting on the ground. And when I was talking to you in December, we expected that plane to be up and operational. We've had an ongoing glitch with the fuel gauge that goes back to the manufacturers. It turns out that we now have a workaround for that allows us to fly the plane. So it's been flying for the last 10 days every day. The two ATRs that we run, and to put in perspective, NSA was over plan on revenue, and it should never have a revenue problem because the planes I'm talking about fly 90% Northwest freight. The problem was on the cost side. With that plane sitting idle, we're using very expensive chartered aircraft, and there's no profit. There's nothing goes to NSA. It's all cost. The freight rates are okay to Northwest, but NSA is getting no return on the investment that's stranded on the ground. Compounded with that is the maintenance ramp up that I described earlier, and this is very much a switch on, switch off. Until you've got your tools, your parts, and your mechanics trained, and all your operating procedures in place, the space leased or accommodated, you're not doing your maintenance yet. So that hasn't been fully operational. It has now started as of February, where we're doing all of our ATR line maintenance in our Thompson hangar. We've pulled it all away from a third party. And I don't know if I gave enough color on this. I probably wasn't aware of it as much myself in December, but our assessment of the fall choice to use a particular third-party maintenance provider can only be described as a very poor decision. This provider was not capitalized sufficiently to have the parts on hand to do the work on a timely basis. There was never a safety factor with this, but the quality eventually was something that came to be a concern prospectively. So we pulled out and had to make this move. We had some temporary relationships established, but we're now free and clear from that maintenance provider, and it was nothing but problems in the fall. So what is, you know, when we think about NSA and the, you know, how could things possibly be tougher than they were? And we've had this looked at in many different ways, and people who are fully objective, I say the NSA management team isn't, because they're very, in a way, proud of what they can accomplish and very, and feel bad about what's happened and the mistakes that were made. But the people looked at this independently say these planes, there's nothing wrong with these planes. These planes should fly 220 hours a month, and you will get your results. But you anything that could have happened against you happened in this year. And once you bought those planes, you know, it's something that you should consider to be recurring. So what does non-recurring look like? Well, non-recurring means the normal state, in the sense of we don't have these problems, and there'll always be some in any business. But in our financially for us, and I'll just tie this kind of back to the dividend, because the delta on NSA is $2.5 million in the quarter. And if we felt we were going to continue to drag our business like that, well, of course we'd cycle through it in 2019. That would be a different tone altogether, but we don't see that at all. And it's not flying the plane for 10 days and isn't just green shoots. Like we've looked at this hard, and again, there's no magic as to why the plane shouldn't fly once we've got it mechanically where it needs to be. When that happens, just to tell you, our plan is that we've got $8 to $10 million of free cash flow out of this business of NSA, and that's after significant. Well, normally, a normal high level of CapEx goes back in terms of your engine overhauls. So the EBITDA is about twice that, but part of it goes back to the airplanes. What considered to be legitimately free cash flow would be the 8 million range for sure, and that's our goal for the year. So it's a big swing, and it's one that we expected for the last two quarters to start to transpire. And it didn't in the fourth. There's some things there that we have to look in the mirror about in terms of did we learn quickly enough? I'm talking at the Northwest side in terms of our governance of NSA, but I'm not going to make a bigger meal of it because it's bad enough, but it's also not the way we see it anywhere close to the end of the world. I mean, these are things that we've picked up a lot of insight about over the last 2 years now, 18 months since we've owned the airline. And are getting a very high level of comfort of what we're facing, and strategically are completely comfortable and aligned, I'm talking about myself through NSA up to the board, with what we're accomplishing here. This is a fundamental capacity, I'm not going to say a game changer, part of it is defensive. If you think about where we started, protecting ourselves against monopolistic carriers with high freight cargo increases pending, to not just having controlling our own destiny, but creating something that could go on longer, and the synergies that we're putting together with Northwest, they've been kind of overshadowed by these operational challenges. But the vision inside the company and the energy around what we're creating with the cargo airline is very compelling for us. So that's the NSA story, and not a positive one in the quarter, but still very, very bright for us, we believe, in the future. Beginning in 2019. In the quarter, we also had $3 million in utilities and insurance. It was a cold winter. We know that. That was a big number. We have a lot of work to do. We've done a lot of good work in energy reduction. We just signed, actually, a solar conversion deal for Inuvik. There's a lot of federal dollars now in the market to encourage solar conversion, which is needed. You can't do it on a normal business ROI, even with 70-cent kilowatt power costs in the north. You still need government assistance to convert to solar or wind, but there's an emerging industry that we're going to want to be part of in one shape or form in terms of local partnerships to convert. In the meantime, we did feel this pressure tied to utilities and a little bit in the Caribbean as well. That's a different ball game. That's diesel prices and what the utilities decide to charge. Our St. Thomas store, as an example, we hope to get at least 2/3 solar, but we probably won't get 100% because WAPA, the utility, will want to keep some of the revenue for themselves onto the grid. That's the kind of thing that goes on in the islands. Right now, in the quarter, it was a negative. The other one is insurance. I'm not going to tell you what the insurance delta is going to be next year. It's going to be a few million dollars, and it started to hit us in Q4. Obviously, with the impact of fires and hurricanes, it's not a pretty picture to go to visit your insurance company, and the renegotiations have been tough. Not unexpectedly, we're going to pay more. We'll look at different options, not in 2019, but going forward, at how we can structure our insurance perhaps more cost-effectively. The simple answer is here, we believe we've got more than enough growth to cover insurance and a few other costs, but that's the biggest inflationary cost that's facing us, and we've got a growth profile that should more than offset that. But it is a cost pressure, and we can't mitigate it any further. It is what it is for 2019, and it started to hit us in the Q4 period. One more I'll mention. We had $1 million roughly closure cost. Our Fur Marketing main office in Toronto, we shut that down and bought out the lease and took the charge in the quarter. Before I open for questions, I'm just going to finish with, I started with Giant Tiger, finished with Giant Tiger. So I mentioned that almost all of our banners had mid-single digit comp increases in the quarter. GT wasn't one of those. They dragged us down in the Canadian sales. What we're recognizing is, and I've talked before, our preference is new stores that are more rural and northern. The urban stores are taking up to 4 years to make money. I think that's, you know, GT's guidance to us out of the East is that's what they experience. That's a long time. Whether the urban stores are in the right locations could be another issue. But we have a strong preference for rural and what I call rural northern. So northern BC, for example, all the way from Fort St. John to Kitimat and Terrace would be a more desirable place for us to go next than going into very, what we consider to be much more competitive, more expensive real estate in urban markets. And then rural centers, like for example, we've just approved Meadow Lake, Saskatchewan, a fantastic regional trade center and a very strong comparison to other great Giant Tiger stores we have in the Paw, LaRange, and Thompson. So we know where we need to be, but we have in the pipeline 10 stores, not all like this, not all urban, that are in that 0 to 3 year stage. So they're definitely a drag on bottom line. Top line, we were out of the meat business, the fresh meat business last year. We're finally back into it. That's dragged down sales, and then the construction around the Winnipeg stores, we're just starting to comp that now. So Q4, not as big a surprise to us, but it was just when I know the top line, when you see Canada, the Northern Canada business is closer to the 4-5% range, continues to run at that range, 5% into Q1. We've had the benefit of the carbon tax, of course, credits, they're being paid out, so our income tax service is recycling that cash to our customers and back into our stores, so we've had a good start to Q1 that way. I think that's enough for now. Operator, I'll open the call for questions.